I bet you think I don't know nothing, but singing the blues. Oh, sister, have I got news for you? I'm something. I hope you think that you're something too.
And our guest today is Dr. Gwen Scott, a naturopathic doctor and former CNN news anchor. Dr. Scott is a master herbalist who has...
No, I don't think so. Not right now. This machine. I don't get this machine. It doesn't do what I want it to do. I'm sorry. But I'm sure you'll hear that at some point. This is WBAI New York. It's 7 o'clock. Time for an exciting, action-packed edition of Off the Hook. Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Mike.
Hi there.
Voltaire. Hey. Wait a minute. Why is your mic never working, Voltaire? I don't understand. You sit in a different chair every week, and you just bring the non-working mic thing with you. Go ahead, try now. Try again.
Hello.
There you go. All right. Good. Hi. And hi. Jim.
Hello.
Jim's mic is always working. You can learn a thing or two from him.
Yeah.
And Bernie down in Philadelphia.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And the microphone on your cellular phone seems to be working just fine.
Great.
All right. And Red Hack has just burst through the door.
Sorry, I got stuck downstairs.
Yeah, Red Hack, we need you to go down the hall and kick some ass, because as our official ass kicker on this show, because we're just trying to get the whole premium situation sorted out so that we can offer things tonight. We want to offer really cool things tonight, but we have to make sure that it's in the computer. This is a day for computers to foul up, apparently, because we all fell off the list. We couldn't get into the building. We couldn't get into we got in here with just a few minutes left. I'm sorry, what's that, Bernie?
I said, oh, that's awful.
It is awful. Well, you know, we can't call you or you can't call us. We won't be here to pick up.
Also, it's raining.
I know it's raining. I know. I was outside before this. I had to come in out of the rain to be told I wasn't allowed in the building because the computer expired us for some reason, even though this never happened to us before. You know, I have to ask, and this is not about the building. It's not about the AI. It's about us. It's about human beings in America, and how we somehow convinced ourselves that having a list of names to come into a building somehow makes us secure. How does that exactly make us secure? It doesn't. I mean, if you're going to blow up a building, you can identify yourself. People are going to find out who you are anyway. It doesn't do anything.
I mean, everyone knows that terrorists don't have ID cards. And they certainly don't know how to make them. They don't know. It's just completely impossible if you're a terrorist to obtain an ID card.
That's what's keeping us safe.
Yes.
You know, at some point we just sort of convince ourselves that we need to hand over the liquids to the TSA. And we need to put our names on some kind of a list. And we need to report anybody who spends too much time talking to people that are different from. Like, for instance, I saw a story come by today. I didn't have time to print it out, but there's some kind of law somewhere that says teachers can't be friends with students on Facebook now. What's that all about?
Yeah, I saw that headline as well.
So we're so suspicious now that if a teacher befriends a student on a social networking site, they're up to something.
They must be a pedophile.
Right. What else could they possibly be? And we convince ourselves of these things, and it becomes ingrained in our nature. And that's why when we look at a country like Norway dealing with a horrible tragedy and an act of violence, we can't understand that how they could possibly deal with it this way, where they're not clamping down and filling everybody with fear and revenge and more violence and things like that. We just don't understand it. And it's a real shame, because I think we could learn a lot from that kind of reaction. Yes, Brandon, go ahead.
One of the things that struck me when I read this story is that maybe the people that are making these rules don't even know what a Facebook friend is, as opposed to what an actual friend is. I think a lot of teachers are discouraged from actually being friends of their students, personal friends, and should really be taking a more authoritative role as their educator. But on Facebook, a friend is not a real friend. It's just somebody who clicked, you just click something. That doesn't make you their friend.
Some of us, it's all we got.
I actually saw an interesting piece by someone who they had 3 birthdays in a month on Facebook, and they wanted to see how many people would continue
Wait,
to wish
how do
them a happy
how do you,
birthday.
How do you
they
do
kept
that?
Changing their birthday.
You can do that?
Yeah, you can
you
change
can't do that on Google, You can't change your damn birthday. I accidentally created a fake user, and they were under 18, and they didn't allow Google Plus to work. But they don't tell you that when they ask for your birthday. So,
well, anyway.
Is that a crime to create a fake user? I'm sorry.
If it's under 18 and you're friends with it, then yeah.
I like how you use the word it, yes.
But people kept wishing them happy birthday, and some people more than once,
uh-huh.
Even though the birthdays were only several days apart.
Yeah, I tried that scam once, I think at Friendly's, and they didn't have it. So
you went in every day and told them it was your birthday?
Yeah, I should have gone to a different one, shouldn't
yeah.
I? You live and you learn.
Well, they can only sing so many times.
But, I don't know. This whole security mess has got me in a bad mood. And a lot of us are going to be traveling in the next couple of weeks. Mike, you're going to be at the CCC camp, right?
Yes.
And what other places are you heading, if any?
After I go to the CCC camp, I'll be in Iceland.
Just to come back or to actually
get
off the plane?
You get off
around?
The plane, you
really?
Walk around, and apparently there's a country there.
There is a country there, and
yeah.
I keep wanting to see it, but every time I land there, I have to get on another plane. It's only a transfer point.
Well, I look forward to learning more about it.
Okay, that's great. And Red Hack, how about you?
I am going to the camp, and then Prague and Munich.
Okay, cool. Junts, in your car, where are you going? We're talking to Jens, who's driving in his car right now.
We could call him on the telephone.
You can't hear him if you're listening on the radio, but he hears us. Okay, he's going to Germany and also, I'm not sure where he's going.
I think he's just flying
Germany?
Back, yeah.
Okay, all right. I'm heading over to Poland, Belarus, and Ukraine.
That's
going to be fun.
I saw your tweet or something about getting your visas in order, and I got suddenly very concerned and had to look up and make sure that the countries I was traveling to didn't require visas, but they're all in the EU.
No,
well,
Belarus,
only two.
Belarus is
the
only country in that part of Europe where you need a visa or an invitation to come. And you get an invitation by having a travel agency make a reservation at a hotel and collect a fee for doing that. And then you basically submit your paperwork to the Belarus embassy or consulate, and they take a week, and you don't have your passport for a week. And it comes back with a big sticker taking up an entire page, which is your visa that allows you into that country. And don't try going into the country without that, because you will not get in.
Yeah, I mean, I was fairly certain, being as that the countries that I was going to were all in the EU, but I still got concerned for a moment, because I hadn't even thought to check.
Yeah. I've been to Belarus twice before, though. It's Europe's last dictatorship, and they're very proud of this fact, because dictatorships are hard to run these days with all the internet thing going on. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said don't tell that to Hungary.
Hungary's a dictatorship?
It's a kind of dictatorship.
Is it now?
Yes.
I thought Italy was coming first, but I'm sure competition will be ramped up pretty soon. But I've been there twice before, and I just like to see the differences in the various times. First time I went there, it was really kind of grim. Second time, I saw signs of life and rebellion and things like that. And I'm very curious what's going to be like this time. So we'll report back. I'm also making a stop in Czech Republic on the way back, which is going to be fun. That's always a good place to go. But mostly, it's about CCC, the Chaos Communication Camp, which takes place every 4 years. Last one was in 2007. We're going to be doing a show from there. I guess it's a week from today. We'll be doing a show from a makeshift studio out there on the campground.
We could do better than makeshift if we want.
Yeah,
they have everything there.
It's probably got better equipment than we have here.
We're not going to do it from a phone at the registration desk again?
No. This time we're going to have real radio equipment. It's amazing. I think there are competing radio stations now at the camp. and competing phone networks and things like that. It's simply incredible. Bernie, I think I'd ask you, Bernie. Where are you off to?
I'm wondering if you and you there in the studio and our listeners could help me out here. I'm going to be acquiring a Eurorail pass when I get to Germany, and which is good for 3 countries. Germany has to be one of them, obviously, because I need to travel within Germany. So I can get to pick 2 other countries. They have to be border Germany.
Okay.
So that limits my choices.
Well, couldn't they border each other, or do they have to border Germany? Like, couldn't you go into one country and then the next country and back?
You know, that's a very good. You know, that's I'll have to bring that up because I was talking with someone. They said it has a border Germany, but it makes perfect sense that they could be contiguous. So
yeah, around 60 years ago, you would have had a much better time of getting further because the borders were just constantly expanding. But now it's a little tougher. I would, you know, I like the Czech Republic so much. I would recommend that.
I have been to Prague, and it's magical.
Yeah.
That's what everyone tells me, so I'm really looking forward to that.
You're going to hate it.
Yeah,
you're
going to
go
there. I'm going to go there and make everyone built it up so much.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's all a big joke.
As radio people, I recommend you climb to the top of a, there's a hill there with this big radio TV broadcasting tower with these amazing sculptures of people climbing the tower. Laszlo and I climbed up this hill, and we found this tower, and we just had to explore it. And they have a nice little building at the bottom of it. You can talk to the people that are in the building under the radio tower. You got to check this out.
Okay, well, we'll definitely do that if we're in that part of the world. But anyway, as far as the camp goes, that starts, I believe, a week
Wednesday,
from
right.
A week from, is it a week from today or a week from tomorrow?
It starts on Wednesday. Yeah.
Starts on Wednesday. So
5 days.
So next week we will have experienced the first day of camp, and it goes until Sunday. And these things are always pretty incredible. Now, if you have registered for a ticket, I understand, and I did not hear this from the Chaos people themselves, but apparently tickets are now able to be printed out. I don't understand why they don't email people to let them know this, but apparently if you have to follow their Twitter account.
Well, one would hope that you realize you'll need a ticket and then get one.
Yeah, but you know, I was waiting for the email to come, but I'm used to receiving things rather than having to go out and find them.
The German Chaos people, in my experience, are very good at organizing events, but very bad at organizing ticket systems.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. We're never going to get our tickets now.
Well, Junst and I were talking about it because we had worked on the ticket system for Hope, and he said it was funny because maybe they tweeted or something that they just figured out how to generate the tickets, so now people could get them.
You guys should fly over there and help them with get the printer started. Or
there's people from Holland who had a very well-run ticket system 2 years ago who could like practically walk to Germany.
And they border, so, you know, Bernie, maybe you want to go to Holland. I know you've been there.
I've been there many times, but maybe I'll go back.
Or France. Have you been to France?
I have not spent much time in France, so that's near the top of my list.
Okay.
I do want to go to France.
Yeah, that's a very definite up-and-coming country. You're going to hear a lot about that country in the future, I think.
It's all old Europe, isn't it?
It's pretty old, but, you know, they've got young people, too. They're replenishing the supply. All right, so here we are again. This is the final week of our fundraiser here at the radio station, and I know it's been going on for several weeks now, but it is necessary to keep these happy voices coming out over the transmitters and various topics that we discuss week after week on the FM dial. And what we are doing is actually, you know what? We have the hacker calendar right here.
Can I see?
We offered, yes, I'll hand it to you, Mike, because you asked nicely. We offered this a couple of weeks ago, and last week when we were doing the Kevin Mitnick piece, we said that we were done offering it. But you know what? We have one more week, an extended fundraiser, so we figured, why not? It's officially being released on Friday at DEF CON in Las Vegas. So if you're going there, you'll certainly see it. But we have a copy right here in the radio station, and we're going to offer it again. In addition to the 20 history-related Hope DVDs, these are talks from our Hackers on Planet Earth conference over the years that that basically deal with some kind of historical subject matter, whether it be the history of phone phreaking or various legal challenges that have occurred over the years, or the telephone pioneers, or the DMCA. Even North Korea is in there. We have all kinds of historical focal points that have been touched upon at one point or another at these hacker conferences. It's not just about programming and playing with computers. It's about so much more than that. If you want a good introduction, give a call to 212-209-2950. Not only will you get the 20 DVDs, but you'll get the brand new hacker calendar that, let me describe it. It's these guys are just completely lost in it. They're staring at it.
It's engrossing.
It's engrossing, and it's also glossy. It's a glossy calendar that you hang on your wall.
Yeah, but lots of things are glossy. Not all of them have this kind of content.
That's true. Big pictures for every month of something technological in nature that will draw your eye and be really fascinating. Something you certainly don't see every day. And in addition, almost every single day of the year has some kind of event that happened. Now, Red Hag, I'm going to ask you to stop right there and put your finger down on a date that has something of significance and read the date and what it is that happened on that particular date.
April 11th.
Okay.
Fugitive hacker Kevin Paulson, Dark Dante, apprehended in Los Angeles after months on the run, 1991.
There you go. There you go. There's a bit of hacker history there. There is so much hacker history, it covers virtually every day of the year. And things that are of interest to hackers, things that hackers have done, it's all there. And I've never actually seen, and having worked personally on this project, I guess I'm a little bit biased, but I've never actually seen so many facts in one place involving hackers. I've seen lots of books, but they usually focus on one particular aspect of the hacker world. This kind of wraps it all up, and you see just how big an effect it's had on the world. So the Hacker Calendar is an amazing way to just see that and feel it yourself, and also know what day it is in the year 2012. The calendar actually, it's a 16-month calendar. The first page has 4 months, like calendars have, September, October, November, December of 2011. But then the real fun begins in January 2012, where every single day has something going on. 212-209-2950, you'll get the 20 DVDs and the Hope calendar for a pledge of $75. If you want to pledge $125, you'll get 40 DVDs, twice as many DVDs, filled with Hope content of various sorts, and you'll also get the Hacker calendar. It's a great deal. 212-209-2950. Let's see, I'm going to bring up the phone program here and see if we have any calls coming in.
Well, we should. 212-209-2950 is the number.
We have two calls coming in, yes.
I was just in the tally room a few moments ago, and there are more than two volunteers there.
There are, yes, and a whole lot of phones.
Yeah.
And we don't have that that thing potted up where you can hear the phone ringing, because I find that annoying, and I don't like hearing. I like hearing the sound of phone ringing, but not all the time, and we do get a lot of calls.
I would venture to say obnoxious.
It's a bit obnoxious, yes.
But you can hear the phone ring when you call. You'll hear the ring back while you wait for the volunteer to pick up.
Yeah, right. Just like a regular phone call.
212-209-2950, if you want to try it.
Okay, Mike, you have failed to get another call, but I know, Bernie, you can probably get those phones ringing just by starting to speak.
I don't know what my dulcet tones accomplish, but I do want to encourage our listeners to
nothing
support
yet.
This.
Nothing yet.
This radio station, WBAI, is the only radio station in the United States I know
That's
of.
The longest you've gone without generating a phone call, Bernie. You got to step it up.
Radio show for the hacker community, and we're going to cover stuff here that, and as we have for decades, literally decades, that you're not going to hear on any other radio station. So give some credit to WBAI, keep them on the air, and we'll send you some great gifts in return. 212-209-2950.
Now we're down to one call, Bernie. What did you do? You got rid of a call. No, no. we got to get those phone lines ringing. 212-209-2950. Keep trying.
This hacker calendar, I'm telling you, has 12 months plus an extra 4 months for free, and amazing hacker trivia and history photographs.
It's also got a cover photo that you can preview the cover photo by simply looking at thehackercalendar.com, and you'll see an example of the kind of photography we have in this thing.
You can relive hacker history almost every day by looking at this hacker calendar and saying, hey, on this date in 19 blah 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 or whatever, something significant to the hacker community happened, and you can just have flashbacks about it.
You know,
like, oh, I remember that when that thing happened, and then it just brings you into a whole new world of like, hey, this is just like what's happening now.
Bernie, I'm shocked. First of all, we have three calls, so good job. But I'm shocked that you would think that it's limited to 19 blah, 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 whatever it is you said. No, hacker history goes well beyond the 20th century and the 21st century. There's all kinds of Red Hack. Are you on something? You know something I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm going to find it.
All right. Now, while you're searching, and there's a lot of days to search through, we'll give an example of something that is not just in the 1900s or the 2000s. It's all in there. 212-209-2950. Join the three calls on the line. Go ahead. What do you got?
Here's one, for example. William Austin Burt patents the typographer, a precursor to the typewriter, 1829.
What day
in 1829?
Yeah, what day?
Oh, I'm sorry. July 23rd.
All right. So if you have that calendar hanging on your wall in July 2012, you'll note particular date.
This is kind of cool. A patent for a coin-operated telephone issued to William Gray, August 13, 1889.
What happened today?
What's today?
Today's August 3rd.
CDC's Back Orifice released in 1998.
There you go. See, that's a bit of history right there. But people have forgotten about that. Well,
I remember that.
Yeah, I do too. I was there. I remember it well. 212-209-2950. Get the Hacker Calendar for your pledge of either 75 or 125 and a choice of 20 DVDs or 40 DVDs. I want to play a piece that comes from this particular collection. And this is rather unusual. This is an example of how the hacker world expands well beyond what you might think from reading the mass media or hearing what's talked about on TV and in the movies. This has to do with the Apollo space missions. This was a talk given by Stephen Kass at The Next Hope, which was the most recent one back in 2010. And we're going to hear an excerpt from the three greatest hacks of Apollo, where basically he's talking about how a bit of hacking saved Apollo 13. You'll actually hear a recording from the radio communications between ground control and Apollo 13, in addition to some things that you did not hear that went on behind the scenes. So it's at the beginning, it's a little noisy because there are people talking on the radio, and it's very hectic, and you can imagine you have astronauts up there in space that you're trying to rescue. It's definitely an emotional thing, but I think he does a really good job explaining, and we're just going to hear a few minutes of this. This talk goes on for an hour. It's one of 20 if you pledge $75, one of 40 if you pledge $125, and of course you get the calendar, 212-209-2950.
Did you say 40? 40?
40, yes.
Wow.
Yeah, 40 DVDs for a pledge of $125. That's a good deal. Even if they were blank, it would be a good deal. But they're not blank. They have all kinds of cool things on them. Anyway, let's hear a little bit from the three greatest hacks of Apollo. And I think we're only going to play one of them.
And this is, however, this is a ground loop conversation. So it's a little harder to make out the audio because what you're listening to is an overlay of the astronauts talking. You're also listening out for the flight director talking to the ECOM. And the ECOM was the mission controller in charge of the environmental electronic environmental programs. At one point, he was also in charge of communications, but that was separated out, but they kept the name the same. And you hear him talk to ECOM, and most importantly, you hear him talking a little bit to his backroom boys. So the way mission control was structured was, you see that very classic in all the guys in front of the rows of consoles. Each one of those, if you were to go out the door and turn right, there were many, many other rooms where you might have had, so you have the ECOM sitting at his console, and then he had three or four guys who also had very similar consoles looking at very specific subsystems. And oftentimes they would chat themselves on the loop before they would maybe go back and talk to the flight director. So it's a little bit tangled, but I think you'll get the sense. So that's what the world heard, and now, okay. So these are the actual transcripts from the mission controllers.
Rolls complete. Roger, Pete. Clock and sync flight. Roger. Mark 1 Bravo.
Pilot, Tito.
Here we go. Flight is good. Right on.
Kevin, relieve me, Tom.
Okay, we just lost the platform, gang. I don't know why. We had everything in the world dropped out. Everything in the world
Roger.
Dropped out.
Roger.
I got three fuel cell lights and AC bus light. A fuel cell disconnect, AC bus overload 1 and 2, main bus A and B out.
How's it looking, Ecom?
Is that the SCE?
Boy, I don't know, John. Ecom,
sure
what do you see?
SCE? I've lost it. Ecom, SCE to off.
Say again, SCE to off?
Off.
SCE to aux.
Auxiliary flight.
SCE to aux, Capcom. What panel,
Apollo
Ecom?
Apollo Houston, try SCE to auxiliary, over. SCE to auxiliary.
SCE. SCE
to auxiliary.
Okay, we got
it
back, good.
We got it back, boy. Looks good.
Okay.
And that's it. They saved the mission. So what was happening there was the magic switch SCE to aux. And very clearly, that wasn't a common command. Nobody really knew what it was. But a couple of things went on here. One, the flight controller was a guy called, so let's talk about the SCE first. So the SCE is what's known as a signal conditioning equipment. And the Apollo missions were very heavily instrumented, and a lot of problems they had were due to instrumentation problems. But you get all of these signals, you know, from the heater pump, from the radar, all of these instruments come through. They all have to be normalized into a standard range of voltages so that, one, they can be displayed inside the cockpit, and, two, so that can be sent back down the radio feed. So what had happened was that when a lightning strike happened, all those fuel cells in the service modules that I mentioned tripped off. And so the command module was drawing power from a couple of batteries that were really only meant for re-entry and a little bit of emergency situations. And if you read the Apollo 13 story, it became all about, not the section I'll be talking about, but it became very much about managing those battery reserves. But the problem was that when it went to those batteries, the voltages dropped below what the SE normally use. And there's a little switch down, a little panel that switches into auxiliary mode, which was not in the procedures. It was kind of there almost as a legacy issue from how they had built the equipment. And that said, whatever kind of crappy voltage you have, go with it. And when they did that, they got back telemetry, and also the displays began, you know, reading meaningful results. So they could see not that they had the entire command module melting down, but that they had three disconnected fuel cells. So the man who made that call, though, who recognized that the SE problem, was this guy called John Aaron. He's also very important in Apollo 13 in different ways. But at the time, this incident made him like the original steely-eyed missile man. And the reason he was able to recognize that call that nobody else could have made was because a year earlier, at a PAT test, he had seen this result. And that a test guy had made a mistake with the command module. The SE had been giving out these screwy readings. And he knew they were screwy readings because, you know, there'd be a certain piece of equipment that had only, that he knew would only operate between 12 and 28 volts, and it was reporting 6 volts. It was a very distinct pattern of screwage. It's like, you know, sometimes if you look at your, you know, when you get a blue screen of death and all those numbers appear, he was the guy who could actually look at those numbers and realize exactly what they meant. So in a sense, you might think, well, this is awfully lucky, and it really was lucky. But it does speak to the culture of mission control at that time, where these guys went through every system. They understood systems. They were deeply involved in developing the operations for them. They were deeply involved in talking with the engineers who built them. You know, each one of these guys had an immense depth of technical knowledge that was built up over years in simulations. And then notice when he actually made the call, first off, he checks his backroom guys. He goes, well, do you think it's the SE? They don't know what the hell it is. And he comes back and says, flight, instantly, flight, try SE to auxiliary. He has confidence to make that call that what he thinks he sees is what he sees. And I spoke to Gene Kranz about this, about how you take these flight controllers, many of them are in their 20s, right out of college, and how do you get a guy to that particular point where he can make that call? And he says, well, it took about a year to 18 months to make a flight controller. And you started them off gathering information, doing very simple tasks, gathering information from manufacturers, helping the flight controllers build procedures and instrumentation, and then you put them through simulation after simulation after simulation. And the thing that would wipe out a flight controller was that they wouldn't have that level of confidence. It required a certain level of arrogance. It required a certain level of just go for it. And John Aaron was possibly the epitome of that. He really understood all of his systems, and he had this unshakable confidence. And later on, again, it's an aspect of Apollo 13 I won't be talking about, but he devised this power-up sequence that the astronauts had to enter in without, in order to save power, they had to turn off the instrumentation that would tell them if they were making mistakes or not. So you have them radio up this checklist in which the astronauts had to enter in perfectly, first time after they'd been awake for days, one of them with a urinary tract infection. And he made that call, and he had no problem with it at the time. Years later, as an older man, a little bit more reflective, he still has nightmares about it because of how risky that procedure was. But at the time, you know, you needed these cocky guys who were confident but not overconfident. So that was John Aaron. Oh, the other thing I should say is that as soon as he made the call, notice how the flight controller, who has no idea what's going on, goes, oh, okay, John, and he tells the Capcom, and it gets signaled up. They had trust. They believed each other. They trained with each other. They relied on each other. That's an engineering culture that is primed for success. I mean, recently in years, NASA's been dinged for its, you know, culture issues, but anybody who's involved in high-risk, high-tech enterprises could learn from what these guys did.
All right. And that was riveting, I think. From the three greatest hacks of Apollo, a talk given at the Next Hope, one of 20 DVDs that you'll get for your pledge of $75, 212-209-2950, including the hacker calendar, which is about to be released to the public. Bernie, what do you think of that talk? Did you happen to see that one live?
No, I had to catch that later on download of the audio and listen to it while I was traveling. It just made me realize that the hacker culture is a part of so many parts of our world, and that we never could have got to the moon without the hacker culture of just making things happen in ways that they were never designed to work, or just workarounds, that sort of thing. You know, it's responsible for so many things in our universe, in our lives. So, you know, on that theme, I encourage listeners to call and support the hacker culture and the radio station that broadcasts about hacker culture, WBAI, at 212-209-2950. We're going to send you some great hacker gifts for supporting WBAI. For $75, we'll send you the 2012 hacker calendar, which really starts in September next month, 20 DVDs of the best of Hope, including the thing you just heard. And
the Three Greatest Hacks of Apollo, yes.
Yeah, you're right. The Three Greatest Hacks of Apollo, that thing you just heard, but a whole hour of that with the video. For $125, you'll get 40 DVDs of the best talks of Hope, and also the 2012 hacker calendar. 212-209-2950.
We have 4 calls on the line, so let's make that 8 calls, because we have that many people down there to take the phone calls. 212-209-2950. We'll list off all 20 talks if people are curious as to what historical related talks we have included in the Hope packages. And we also have some more dates to focus on in the with the hacker calendar. But the most important thing, though, is to get those phone lines lit up so that we have a station that we can talk about these things, talk about the various historical things that hackers have been up to over the years. I think what Stephen Cass was saying at the end of that, though, was very key to a lot of the things that we talk about, and that's that engineering culture and how you have to be somewhat overconfident in yourself and just say this is how it should be done. And that's basically how you learn, how by having faith in each other and listening to each other and just playing with technology until it works properly. That's how you get things like Apollo missions to work successfully. 212-209-2950. Anybody lose some keys? We just found some keys. Ah, okay. You don't want those ones? Okay, I don't think. No, that's okay. I have keys. Any listeners have keys that they'd like us to send? No, we're not going to do that. We're just going to send you the DVDs and the calendar. So we have any more dates from the calendar? You guys have been perusing the calendar.
We're just going to send you the DVDs and the calendar. It's 20 DVDs.
20 DVDs, yeah. 20 DVDs.
Or 40 DVDs.
And they'll have you focused on some bit of hacker history that you'll learn a lot from. What do you got, Red Hack?
June 14th, Flag Day. Also,
that's one of the official. We have a lot of official holidays too.
In 1822, the difference engine was proposed by Charles Babbage.
Now you're going overboard with all the 1800s.
All right.
We do have a lot of things. I think there are some things that go back to the 1700s, maybe even before then. There are a couple that actually go into the future, but I'm not going to give those away. 212-209-2950. It's really, you want to maybe describe some of the photographs that way, just in your own words, not so much the captions, but just looking at something saying, wow, I've never seen anything like that before.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting kind of old telephone equipment or almost some of the pictures are kind of humorous in a way in terms of what they have in them. But it's mostly centered around telephony, actually, I think, entirely.
Yeah, it's a telephonic theme for the pictures, as far as old phones or existing networking equipment or just weird things that you might not notice unless
Things that have clearly been on fire.
Uh-huh. Like, for instance, the cover, which you can... Yes, well, we won't get into that. The cover is an alarm, a Bell System Emergency Alarm. What is a Bell System Emergency Alarm? Have you ever seen one of those? Well, they have them inside the phone company, and we were fortunate enough to be able to get some shots of that, and here they are in really vivid color and extremely interesting to look at. Photographs taken by our two staff photographers, Dave Buchwald and Kyle Drostick, who went around taking pictures of all sorts of things telephonically. Again, you get this plus the 20 DVDs for a pledge of $75. 212-209-2950 and 40 DVDs for $125. Again, 212-209-2950. We're down to one call, so if you weren't getting an answer before, now you can call and you'll definitely get an answer. Okay, here are the 20 talks as promised. Actually, you know what? We all have a list, so we can alternate. How about that? I'll start with one. You do number two. No. Voltaire will be three. Red Hack, you'll be four. Can we do this? And then we'll just keep going back and forth.
So I'm every multiple of four.
Pretty much, yeah. Look at it that way.
I can handle that.
Here I go. Stephen Levy keynote at The Last Hope, where he talks about all kinds of history of hackers and hacking and things like that.
We have the Hack Freak History Primer with Jason Scott, who knows really everything about hack and freak history.
He really does. He makes it his business to know everything about what's going on in the hacker world. And he shares some of that with us at The Last Hope in 2008.
We had the three greatest hacks of Apollo, which you just heard.
We just heard that, yes, from The Next Hope.
What and who is Anonymous from The Last Hope?
You mean Anonymous, the group
Anonymous.
that controls everything. And wow, so they actually appeared on stage. Well, some of them appeared on stage. Yeah. All right, you get that as well. Email, Descendant of the Telegram, with our good friend Cheshire Catalyst, giving that talk at The Last Hope. Cheshire is great for talking about history and the way technology used to work, and also just really simple ways of doing what has become very complex, using links as a browser, for instance, various things like that give you an understanding of how the whole network works.
We have The Phone Company, the FBI, and The Phone Freaks by Phil Lapsley.
From The Next Hope. Yeah, he does great talks about history involving phone freaks and things like that.
We have Vintage Computing by Evan Koblenz and Bill Degnan.
Okay, and that's from The Next Hope as well. Yeah. Vintage Computing, talking about old computers and really bringing back memories for people that were involved in the early days and teaching people a lot who weren't involved back then.
The Telephone Pioneers of America by Kyle Drozdik, who's one of the photographers who worked on the calendar.
What a coincidence. Wow. We were just talking about him.
And that was from The Next Hope.
That was from The Next Hope, yes. And then a subject dear to my heart, DPRK Exploration by Michael Kemp from that was the most recent conference, The Next Hope, where he talks about North Korea and some of the mysteries and oddities of that nation. And, yeah, it's of interest to hackers because it's weird and strange and different. So it's not, like I said, about just about computers. It's about all kinds of things.
And if you're a U.S. citizen, it's a hack to get in, isn't it?
Well, no, not necessarily. It's a hack to find out the information, but it's fairly easy to get in if you pay attention. It's all about paying attention.
Something to which we've paid a lot of attention, A Decade Under the DMCA by Marsha Wilbur.
And that was from 2008.
So it's been more than a decade now.
The Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And we, in fact, 2600, were the first organization to be sued under the DMCA back in 2000. So there's history there as well. Voltaire.
The Intersection of Culture Jamming, Hacking, and Hacktivism.
Uh-huh.
And that's also from The Last Hope.
Okay.
How the U.S. Shattered the Enigma Code by Shalom Silbermintz. That's from The Next Hope.
Okay, and that's real history there.
I mean, that's, you know, for people who don't know, the Enigma Code was a system of encryption that the Germans used during World War II. So it took a lot for us to break it, but we did.
I think
we worked with Britain to break it, right?
Yeah.
We had
some help. And I think Poland was involved as well.
Yeah, they started it.
Yeah, they started the whole, not the war. They started figuring out how to crack it. Right. From Indie Media to Demand Media, The Transformation of Journalism by Chris Anderson. That was a talk given at The Next Hope as well. And, yeah, journalism is another part of hacking. And the evolution that we've witnessed over the last few years is very much in the hacker world.
Our friend Caramoon gave a talk on the life and times of Alan Turing, father of the computer, at Hope No. 6.
Back in 2006, and Alan Turing. Yeah.
And he was involved in the Enigma Code breaking.
Yeah. There's so much history.
And so much more.
And of course, a lot more. But that was actually, it's funny, that was a name that I was trying to pull
you,
up.
Do you,
and,
have to, do you have trouble remembering Alan Turing's name? You should be ashamed of yourself.
Well, here's the thing. Some people mix up Nikola Tesla and Alan Turing because their names begin with T. Some people do that.
I don't.
Birth dates of both of them are in the calendar. I can tell you that right now. So if you knew what day they were born, you'd be able to find it. Yeah, it's that easy.
Nikolai Tesla.
There you go.
Born 1856 on July 10th.
And what else happened on July 10th, Red Hat? What else?
Oh, the EFF began operation in 1990.
Isn't that interesting? So sometimes you'll find one day has two significant events, and you wonder, did the EFF intentionally start on the birthday of Nikolai Tesla? These are questions that have never been asked before, but when you have the calendar, you'll be asking these questions all the time and listening and watching DVDs. 212-209-2950. Join the one call on the line. I hope that's not the same call. I hope lots of people have called in the time since I looked at that last. There's all kinds of things that you can benefit from by having these DVDs. Whose turn is it, by the way?
Fine.
Okay.
We have Mischief and Mayhem at the RNC by Shapeshifter.
Yes.
From the Fifth Hope.
Shapeshifter, actually, now there's a lot of history there. The Fifth Hope took place in 2004. And he had actually been arrested at the Republican convention in Philadelphia back in 2000. And it's funny because I got arrested at the one in New York in 2004, right after he gave this talk, I guess. And he talks about his case. He was our layout artist and basically just somebody who took an interest in things going on. He was an activist, but all he was doing at the time was talking on his telephone, walking down the street. In fact, I think he was talking to me because I had just arrived in Philadelphia and I wanted to see what was going on. But apparently that was enough to get him arrested because they thought he was coordinating everything. And it just goes to show how the authorities really don't have a clue half the time. That seems to be a common theme we keep coming back to. So that RNC talk is definitely a very interesting one as well.
Freaking in the Early Days by Captain Crunch and Cheshire Catalyst from the Fifth Hope.
And you can't ask for better people to tell you about Freaking in the Early Days. Yeah, they know all the facts, all the gossip. Okay, last round here. The Conscience of a Hacker by The Mentor from H2K2, and that was in 2002. And, of course, The Conscience of a Hacker was basically an anthem written by The Mentor. We brought him up to New York to read it live. This is the piece that was read in the movie Hackers. It's something that that every hacker quotes every now and then. It's just kind of a call to arms, and it's really inspirational. So it's definitely a historic moment having him there in front of a crowd reading the piece that he wrote.
We have the retro computing panel at H2K with Graphics, Mr. Ohm, Night Stalker, and Sam Nitzberg.
And that's from H2K in the year 2000.
Right, so imagine how retro the computing will be now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was a great talk, too. A lot of enthusiasm shown for old computing and things like that.
We have the DCSS story with you and Robin Gross.
You being our listeners? No, you being me.
Yes.
Okay. See, not only are you looking at me when you say that.
If listeners were in the audience, they'd probably ask a question. So.
Yeah, you might hear yourself if you were at a Hope conference. That's true. You might see yourself.
Students might be in it.
Yeah, it's quite possible. Now, the DCSS story... is basically related to that lawsuit we made reference to before, where we were sued for a program written by Jan Johansson of Norway. Basically. Go ahead.
Is this the dramatization, or is that different?
No, that was the mock trial. Now that's something else. We have all kinds of weird things. And finally, Red Hat, you get the last talk of the 20 DVD set.
So the 20th talk of the 20 DVD set is the first talk of the first Hope Conference.
Back in 1994, where we started the whole thing. You'll see how it all came about. And that is history right there.
But you don't have to watch them in order, so you could start with that one if you wanted to relive the experience.
You can watch them any way you want. But, okay, we do have more calls online, but only one other call, so... we want to have people call in now, 212-209-2950. I'm going to play a piece from Kevin Mitnick. Now, this shows up if you get the 40 DVD set. So if you pledge $125, you'll get some other DVDs, including this piece of Kevin Mitnick's where he's telling a story. And this took place in the Next Hope. During that infamous informants panel where everyone's telling their story for a few minutes. And this is Kevin Mitnick's story. 212-209-2950. Pledge of $125, you'll get this DVD plus 39 others. Pledge of $75, you'll get the 20 historical DVDs. All pledges, 75 and over, get the brand new Hacker Calendar, just being released this week. Here's Kevin Mitnick. 212-209-2950.
So without the dialogue, and that's what I hope we accomplish here today, the dialogue where we actually try and understand where we're all coming from, maybe we can prevent this kind of thing from continuing to happen. But right now, and as you'll hear with some of the stories today, this is a part of our community that has always been there. The amount of people who turn into informants, the amount of people who turn people in, the amount of people that you think you can trust with information that you really can't, that has always been with us, and likely will be for quite some time. Kevin, what do you have?
Yeah, I had issues with informants as well.
Did you?
Little issues, yeah. First of all, the way the federal authorities work is it's a divide and conquer. So what they want to do is if they could find more than one person involved in a case, what they'll do is they'll try to turn the other person to what they call a cooperator. So, and the benefit of that, obviously, is the person gets a reduced sentence. Or under the federal sentencing guidelines, they get what they call acceptance of responsibility. So in essence, what the informant or the snitch is actually getting paid with, you know, not money, but less time in exchange for their testimony, which I have a problem with, because if a jury found out that somebody was paid $10,000 to testify, or they were paid with 1 year less in prison, to me it's the same. So they actually get paid for their testimony. In my personal experience, when I first hacked, and this is right out of high school, I was 17 years old, I became involved with this group of guys, and they knew much more about the RISC-T operating system. In fact, they actually were the administrators of the system for the Los Angeles Unified School District. And at the time, I was into phone phreaking. I didn't really care much about hacking. I was more had a very passionate feeling towards telephony. And I wanted to join this group. So what they did is they had their initiation was like an impossible task. They had a colleague that actually worked for Digital Equipment Corporation on the RISC-T development team. And they told me for me to be able to join their group, I had to break into RISC-T development a deck. And I said, well, how can I do that? Well, we're going to give you the dial-up number. So they gave me the dial-up number, and at the time, you know, the only thing you could do is either guess passwords or use social engineering at that point. So I actually used social engineering. I was able to get in. And then what these guys did is they immediately went down to an office that actually had faster modems, you know, like 1,200 baud, because back then we're at 110, 300 baud. So they run down to their office, 1,200 baud, and they're actually copying the source code to the RISC-T operating system. And I was kind of watching them do this. And then I found out later, after they finished this task, they actually called Digital Equipment Corporation and told them, I'm the one that hacked in, after they stole all their source code. Fortunately, I was a juvenile at the time, and nothing actually happened to me. I was never approached by the authorities. But later on in life, I chose bad hacking partners. And there was a guy named Lenny DeSico, and he and I always had contests against each other. So I worked at a company, he worked at a company, and we'd have a challenge. If we could hack into each other's systems, like kind of like capture the flag, we would the reward would be $200. So I kept getting into his system at work, but he could never get into mine, and he got angry. And then one time, and then it ended up becoming a situation where he actually went to I did some pranks because we had a little falling out over this, and he actually went to the FBI and told them all the hacking we were doing in Digital Equipment Corporation, because at that time we were copying the VMS source code. So here's a guy that wasn't even under investigation or anything at that point, and because he was angry with me, went to the federal authorities and became an informant. But because he didn't get a lawyer or discuss this with an attorney, what had happened is he actually ended up getting himself convicted of a felony. Yeah, which was really stupid. He was just so angry, he ended up, now he has a felony on his record. So then later on, you know, then I got involved with another guy, and he was in the fugitive game. Those that have read the book, there's a guy named Louis DePayne. He and I were hacking partners for over 20 years. And in the fugitive game, because John Littman got input from him and not really the authorities, when they went and searched his apartment, in the book it's portrayed as he was one up on the FBI, that he was not being cooperative at all, and he was being antagonistic, and that he knew all about their operation, which he knew a lot about their operation, but in the book it appeared he was like non-cooperative and a smartass to the government. But in reality, when I got my discovery, what they call FBI 302s, this is when somebody interviews with an FBI agent, they fill out these FBI 302 forms. When I got that in my pretrial discovery, after 4 years, by the way, I found out that that really wasn't the case. That was that as soon as they got into, searched his apartment, he immediately offered cooperation if the government could provide him protection, like I was going to do something. But so in all my cases, except for the last one of Tsutomu Shimomura, they all involved informants. And in one case, it was a guy that was had a vendetta against me. The second case was a guy who was under investigation with me. Myself, when I was sitting in custody, there was the Free Kevin movement. I was offered to cooperate. You know, because what happens is how the government wants to work the cases is they want somebody to be able to testify against the other. And they want to divide and conquer both, you know, all the parties in a conspiracy. But at the time, I refused to cooperate because I felt it was against my ethic and moral fiber to reduce my sentence to hand it off to somebody else. I just felt really uncomfortable. So I sat in prison much longer than I normally would if I would have had to cooperate, but I feel good today knowing that I didn't hurt somebody else. I didn't try to reduce my sentence to harm another individual. And it even got to the point where the government said, okay, you don't have to cooperate against somebody else, but we want to debrief you. And I even refused to allow the government to debrief me. So what ended up happening is I actually served out, like, the full sentence. I didn't get any points for acceptance or responsibility or anything of that sort. But what I think what's also interesting, there's a way to detect formants in the federal system. There's a computer system called PACER, Public Access Court Electronic Records, and this allows you to look up dockets, the docket reports of people that have been charged with federal crimes, also civil, you have bankruptcy there. So in knowing how the system works, because I was inside the system for quite some time, I could look at a docket and kind of get a good sense of whether that person is cooperating against another individual. And let's look up an example. I'm not saying this particular person's an informant, but it's highly suspicious, some of the circumstances in their docket. So let's take a quick look.
All right. No, Kevin, we can't do that right now, unfortunately, because we don't have much time left. But this is one of the talks that you get for a pledge of $125, 40 Hope DVD talks, and the Hacker Calendar, which is just being released right now. For a pledge of $75, you'll get 20 Hope DVDs and the Hacker Calendar. Now, Mike, you just visited down in Tally, and quite pleasant down there at this time of year.
They're very friendly, but a bit too relaxed for my taste.
Yeah, and we have not broken 1,000 yet. We need about another 4 or 5 calls to break 1,000. We have to break 1,000, or they won't let us out of the building. it was hard enough getting in the building, but to get out, we're going to have to raise $1,000. And that's where our listeners come in. If they could help us out, please, either the $75 pledge or the $125 pledge will definitely get us over that amount, and then we're done. This is the last few minutes of the fundraiser. The fundraiser actually ends today, from what I understand. 212-209-2950. Next week we'll be on from Germany. And, of course, some of you will be here. Walter, you'll be here in the studio, I believe.
Unfortunately.
You don't like the studio?
No, but I'd rather be in the makeshift studio.
Well, you'll be in a makeshift studio at some point. I can almost guarantee that. And Rob T. Firefly will be manning the board. Bernie, we're going to have to call on you again to help get those calls coming in. Well, one's in right now. That's good. Thank you for that person calling in. Please, we need about 4 or 5 more calls to get over $1,000.
Emmanuel, I really want to beg our listeners to let us...
Don't beg, Bernie. Don't beg. It doesn't become you to beg.
I want to send you all. No, I want to send our listeners. I want WBA to send our listeners the hacker gifts that keep on giving.
Two
I mean, this is an amazing hacker calendar that covers 16 months, starting in September, with amazing pictures and trivia and just stuff that makes you think about everything going on in the hacker scene for generations. And we're going to send you stacks of DVDs with the best of the Hope conferences. 20 DVDs or 40 DVDs, your choice. Just give us a call. You're going to support WBAI, the only radio station that has a hacker radio show like this. And
right,
we're going to send
calls.
You some fantastic gifts.
What's that phone number, Bernie?
212-209-2950. Give us a call. We only have minutes left. We've got to finish up this fundraiser with a bang. Get us over $1,000, and we'll leave you alone for the next few months. We promise.
Yeah, well, we won't leave you alone with our banter on the air and controversial subject matter, because that's what we do, and that's what so many different shows on the station do. That's what we've been doing for 51 years now, since 1960. It's magic, and you make the magic happen. Radio stations don't survive on good wishes alone. You need to be able to pay the bills. You need to be able to keep the transmitter maintained. And we're not talking about a low-power station here. We're talking about a station that's as powerful as Z100 and KTU and all the stations that are on the air here in New York City on top of the Empire State Building. And you want to talk about hacking. That's a hack right there, to be able to have a non-commercial radio station not only on top of the Empire State Building, but in the middle of the FM dial, not in the non-commercial ghetto that's below 92. We're right there with everybody else, and every day people stumble upon this radio station because they don't turn the dial enough to get to the one they thought they were going to. And they're entranced by what is real radio, people actually talking and exchanging ideas and taking phone calls and being controversial and not having any commercials. 212-209-2950. Make that magic continue for another 51 years. It's history. The whole world follows WBAI, and there's a reason for that. It's because of that magic. Yes, Red Hat.
And they have been since January 10, 1960, when WBAI in New York begins broadcasting as part of the Pacifica Radio Network.
Are you saying that's in the calendar, too?
Uh-huh.
My goodness. Even things that are peripherally involved with hackers, like WBAI, are notated in the hacker calendar. I'm surprised. I forgot about that, actually. 212-209-2950. We have three calls on the line. Let's make that five. Let's make that six.
I don't think it's right to say that WBAI is peripherally involved. It is the essence of the show. And it is, you know, what other radio station will let hackers have an hour on the air every week for years? You won't find another one in that calendar.
Yeah, since 1988. I'm sure that date is on there, the first off-the-hook broadcast back in 1988. And, there's all kinds of history has been made just on this radio show alone. So imagine you add in all the other radio shows that are on in a typical week, and then you add in all the weeks in a typical year and all the years in the decades that this place has been around, and you see this is something really worth preserving. And believe me, there are entities that would take over this frequency in a second and turn it into something very similar to what you hear on every single other radio station. It's worth a lot, worth a ton of money. And people can profit from that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think we profit more handsomely just by the conversations we have, the interactions we have, the interviews we do, the adventures that we embark upon and document here on this particular show. It's been so much fun over the years doing this, and we'd like to really continue. And we know the listeners get a lot out of it as well and contribute their bits of information and stories and questions and things like that. Please help invest in that and keep that going. 212-209-2950. We only have 3.5 minutes left. We have to get over that $1,000 mark. Again, pledge of $75 gets you 20 DVDs plus the hacker calendar. Pledge of $40 gets you 40 Hackers on Planet Earth DVDs and the hacker calendar. You'll learn so much about the hacker culture just with these items alone.
What's really amazing about the station is that it's funded this way, dollar by dollar. You might think that your pledge doesn't matter, we could do without it. But no, every pledge, dollar by dollar, $75, $125, anything you can give more, you can give less, 212-209-2950, and it's your support that make this station stay on the air for all those years.
All right, Bernie, I'm going to give the last word to you while I start up the theme. And this theme, it's actually the Off the Hook theme with words. Actually, it has words normally, but these are all the words. But Bernie, I'm going to give you the last few seconds to get some more calls coming in.
Listeners, please support this radio station. It's the only radio station that brings a hacker radio show like this to your ears 365 days a year. Please give us a call, 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Keep the shows coming. You just got to support the station. 212-209-2950. Thank you.
You remember, everybody involved in this particular radio program and all the others on this radio station are doing it out of love, out of the spirit of volunteerism. We come in here week after week. Sometimes we get very wet coming in here, as we did today. Sometimes we're not even allowed in the building. We have to figure out how to get past that particular barrier. But we make it, and we do all kinds of cool different things every week. It's because we believe in this place, too. If you believe in this place, please give us a call now, 212-209-2950. We'll see you next week from Germany and points beyond. Again, 212-209-2950. Thanks, everybody who called in. We'll see you next week. Good night.
Thank you.